Hello, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics podcast, the show where we talk the nuts and bolts of making comics. And this episode, Andy Schmidt is rejoining us after taking some time off last episode and some different comics things going on that have been announced and not announced. Hello, Andy.
Hey, Joey.
Thanks so much for your time doing this today. But we have a special guest, somebody that's actually been through your class in writing and also a member of the workshop and also has produced a comic, and we are going to talk about all of those things. It's Keith Robinson. Hello, Keith.
Hi, Joey. Nice to be here, and hi, Andy. Thank you guys for having me.
We really appreciate you doing it. And you know, we were talking before we rolled about maybe get a little bit of your origin story, Keith, and then talk about the comic that I've been lucky enough to preview. I saw it. You know, it's funny enough, I was out at a skate park with my daughter on her scooter, and it came in on my phone, and I looked at the cover. I was like, this is already great, which is awesome. The cover just grabs you so much, but it's pretty fun. I'll let you get into a little bit more into it. But how did you get into comics, and what led you to getting to know Andy and Comics Experience?
Yeah, so I first started reading comics sort of out of necessity and boredom, and so... You know, I grew up in Georgia, and my mother would take me to the grocery store with her. And instead of walking around with her, I would just go to the comic book section and basically read comic books for an hour while she grocery shopped. And that's sort of how I got into comics. And she didn't mind, because at that time I was not interested in reading much else than comics. And so she figured, I'm reading something. That's great. And I'm out of her hair while she's shopping. So, you know, it kind of served both of us well. And, you know, later in life, I just continued to sort of read occasionally and found the Comics Experience podcast one day and have been listening for a while.
That is eerily similar to my childhood of, well, we're going to the grocery store, and my mom would just sort of like plop me down at like that little spinner rack at the grocery store. And then she'd like swing back by and pick me up on her way out. I'd be like, all right. And she'd usually buy something because she felt guilty that I'd been thumbing through them.
That's right. Any comic that I didn't get through, my mom would buy for me. So
yeah. Moms are great.
The grocery store comics. I feel like that's such a bygone era, but I was the same, where it would be 7-Elevens and spinner racks or whatever the little locally owned grocery stores where you'd always get stuff. And was there something in, I guess, getting to the point of wanting to do your own comics? Because for me, I think I've talked about this a couple times in the past, I probably checked out Andy's website, I don't know, for 2 years, yeah. Something like that, before I met you in maybe 2010, 2011, Andy, at a convention. And I was like, I'm going to do this now. But it's so funny how sometimes I think folks might just jump in, and then sometimes it's like, well, it's going to be a commitment for you, obviously, of time and resources, but it's also a creative endeavor. And sometimes those can be daunting, just for the sheer, like, well, I got to put myself out there with my story or my art or my whatever. And yeah, from there it can get a little bit dicey.
Well, for me, it was two things. So one, my older son started reading graphic novels and comics. And so I thought that was amazing. And I kind of got to share my love of comics with him. And so I started reading more current titles. And the other thing, you know, I continued to listen to podcasts, and I started hearing new people come on the show and talk about their experience. And so it wasn't the same people over and over again. And that convinced me that, hey, something is going on there that's actually working. People are, you know, happy with what their experience is. They're producing work. They're putting their work out there. And so, you know, this fall, I just decided to, you know, or last fall, I should say, I just decided to take the leap and join the Intro to Writing class.
And clearly you hated it. Like, that Andy, you know, he's a monster.
I'll say, after the I was addicted after the first couple of weeks. I really didn't know what to expect initially, but after the first couple of weeks, I kind of, you know, reflected to myself and my wife. I said, you know, I'm really enjoying this. This has been a lot of fun. I'm learning a lot. So
Yeah.
Good. That's what we want. Fun and learning a lot. Wow. Awesome.
And one of the things that's interesting, that also for I think people getting into doing their own comics, there can be some paralysis by analysis of, I want to do a comic and it's 5 issues, or I want to do a comic and I hope it can run for 3 years. And Andy, your whole thing has always been, gonna do a 5-page story. Not only is it hard, but it's also manageable. And once you get a handle on doing a shorter story like 5 pages, you can have the luxury of 22 pages or however many.
Yeah, actually, I listened to the 200th, anniversary episode the other night, Joey, and you had all the different folks associated with Comics Experience give that one tidbit thing, and Riley was talking about, and he was applying this to artists about, never do a project that's more pages than the total amount you've drawn in the past. And I started thinking about that for writers, and I was like, that's perfect. So actually, I had class on Wednesday night, and I brought that up in that class, and I was like, this actually really applies pretty nicely to writers too. Like, start with a 5-page story and then do another 5-page story and then do a 8 or 10 page story and like build up. And there's a lot of like sort of, bare bones reasons for that. But, one is you got to learn how to write small before you go big. But then also too, it's a lot easier to find somebody that can, if you're not going to illustrate it yourself, they'll commit to 5 pages than 5 issues. But
And
yeah.
that's important. That was important for me because I cannot draw and don't wish to learn. And so that's another key. One of the things about this is that I've enjoyed is that I wanted to see the process from the beginning to the end. That was sort of my goal in this. And Andy talks a lot about what is your goal in the class. And so my goal became I just want to see what it's like to take a project from concept to have a printed product. And so that's been my goal. And 5 pages, 5 pages was the perfect length to see that within a short, relatively short time frame.
What shows with your comic, Keith, in Super Scooter Sydney, that in the best possible sense, it feels longer than 5 pages. Like, you all did such a great job in realizing this, slice of life world, and I think sometimes that's so hard to do with a short story where you feel like you get a story with three acts, a beginning, middle, and end, and that shows. And to your point about learning how to, how it's all made, I feel like it's so informing the first time you see an artist, if you're a writer, put even layouts down with what you've written. And sometimes that can be such an aha moment of, oh, I did this part really well, and I need to change how I'm doing these other parts. Because at least for me, like the first time I got layouts back, I was like, oh no, this is not how I should have written this comic at all.
No, I agree with that 100%. And even in the class, when you're getting feedback from your colleagues, your other classmates, things that you don't notice, they notice and bring to your attention, and it's so helpful to do that. For example, in the book, the Dylan character, he says something to Sydney. He says, "Are you going to barbecue or mildew?" Which basically means, "Are you going to do it or not?" And that to me seemed, as a African American kid growing up in the South, that's something that I would say to my friends, all the time. But some of my classmates, they missed it, or they, like, what does this mean? And so I did have to go back and rework the. I didn't. I left the phrase in there because it seemed authentic to me, but I did have to go back and make sure it was set up properly, so that even if you had never heard that phrase before, you understood what Dylan was saying in that moment.
I was just
Yeah,
flipping through to read
whereas
that
I
again.
also grew up in the South, and I knew exactly what that meant. I was like, yeah, you get mildew if you, it's the Rolling Stone gathers no moss. It's like the, yeah, early bird gets the worm. I was like, I get it. Yeah.
Well, for the listener, I don't know if you have your elevator pitch of what the story is, but that might be informing too to what you've written here, and then maybe some of the background on that, because you included that It's in the Comics Experience newsletter that went out today. Today's Friday, June 12th.
Yeah, no, so it's, you know, the story is about a little girl that has to overcome her fear of dogs to rescue her stuffed unicorn Sparkles. And that's, you know, that's what we learned to do in the class, you know, to give that short elevator pitch. And, you know, the other thing about it is that she's riding a scooter in it. One of the things that the artist Jody did so well is, you know, in my description of the character Sydney, I said she's wearing an outfit that only a 5-year-old could get away with. And, you know, she's got on a tutu. It all looks ridiculous. It's very colorful. And I think she captured that spirit so well in the comic. And the other thing I said to the artist was that, you know, this is just a love letter to little sisters. And if you have a little sister or a little brother, you kind of know, you know, what that means. They can get you into some predicaments, but you still love them for it.
Having a 5-year-old daughter, it is 100% what you said. And that's it's so visually spot on for that. That's ridiculously funny.
And, you know, even before Jody came on to do the art, and Jody is a really phenomenal artist. We were lucky to get her on it. But even before she was on, like just reading that script, like you could just tell, you know, Keith just had such an appreciation and a love for the relationship, at least between those two characters. I didn't know Keith well enough at the time to know like about, you know, his own kids and all that and that stuff. But, you know, it was just, it's even just reading, like even like reading the panel descriptions, which of course the end reader doesn't read that, but like even reading that, you could just tell there was this joy, there was this lightheartedness, there was this playfulness to it. Like it was just clear pretty much from the get-go, like this is great. And, you know, reading it, it's still every time I read it, it, you know, it just reminds me of like all of my favorite parts from the movie The Sandlot.
Mm.
It's so evocative of a particular mood and those relationships. And it's this wonderful 5-page bit of joy. Like every time I read it, I smile every single time.
Well, thanks. Yeah. I mean, so my, I have a younger sister, and so, you know, a lot of what, inspired me to do this story was our time. You know, I was a latchkey kid. So you come home at 2:30 in the afternoon and parents don't get home till 5:30, 6:00. And so you're there with your sibling, and you know, when I was a kid, what we do is go outside and kind of walk around and not get into too much trouble, but have a short adventure. And that's what I was trying to capture in the story, is just sort of a short sibling adventure that that people would enjoy and could relate to.
That's excellent. You touched on it a little bit already, Keith, but I'm wondering if there is anything else, either big picture or detail, that you remember kind of getting into this script and just the overall process that you came away with on how to make a comic. And maybe we could talk about your creative team and working with a creative team, because that's also something that can be daunting if you don't know people and you're also going to be out trying to find talent, trying to find people to work with. There's just the simple act of, do I like them as an artist? And then do we get along? Are that, you know, can I, how is this collaboration going to work? There's so many factors that can come into, oh, now all of a sudden it's kind of, well, Keith's running a small business or project managing a project on top of it. And maybe not everybody doing comics has that background. I think, you know, I feel like 9 times out of 10, it's folks that maybe haven't had that experience before. And you're trying to put your arms around not just how do I make art, how do I write a story, how do I letter, you have to manage relationships and have those back and forths too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, with any field, terminology can be a barrier. And so I think that the intro to writing class, and Andy will probably remember this, I asked a lot of, you know, they're not stupid questions, but very definitional questions, like what does that mean? Or what's a one shot? Things like that. And so it was helpful in that way, but also, I also took the editing class, or, you know, the project management class. And, you know, what I learned in that class was, you know, okay, this is what it takes to manage a project, but I don't necessarily want to do it. And so I approached Andy about the creative services, service that Comics Experience offers, to see if I could do it that way. Now, the editing class, again, helped with the terminology. It helped me understand sort of what the process was. And so I think I've been able to kind of communicate and understand what was going on as we moved through the process a lot better because of, you know, because of the class.
Yeah, and the and Paul Aller wound up actually running the creative services aspect of this, because I was just overbooked at the time. Otherwise, it would have been me. But the way the creative services works, you know, it's not the case of you hand us a script and then we just give you a comic at the end and you just accept it, right? Like we're giving you the, you know, we send you options for artists who we've usually, in most cases, we've worked with them before. Sometimes, I mean, you got to try new people sometimes, but we try to find artists that we think stylistically match your script, and, you know, we can have that conversation with you beforehand and all that sort of stuff. And then we reach out, we do the hiring, and, you know, on the rare occasion that it's needed, we do the firing. I think that's only happened once, I think, but yeah, we kind of handle all that stuff. But you're going to, you know, as the writer and as the client, frankly, you know, you're going to see the layouts and be able to offer notes and things. But we talk, you know, we approach everything as an educational experience, right? So even though you've hired us to do this work, for those that are interested, and some people just aren't, but for anybody like Keith was, it's really interested in how does this work, we'll talk through it. And if you give us notes and we're like, that's not really a great note to give, because the storytelling is actually really good, it just doesn't look like what's in your head, like it's kind of not super valid to make them redo work when they actually did the job we asked them to do, you know, we'll have those conversations with you, so you can kind of, it's still a learning experience. Fortunately, there wasn't a whole lot of discussion, I don't think, with Jody, because she really is fantastic on all levels. But there was probably a lot of, wow, that looks great.
And, you know, that's what I'll say is when you get the first pages back, I was floored. You know, I didn't cry, but I did get emotional, because to see my words kind of come to life like that, and for Jody to capture it so well, and me not really having much to say other than I can't wait to see what this looks like at the end. It was a great feeling.
So exciting when you start getting art in.
Oh yeah.
I can't imagine that feeling. I mean, you might get used to it in a way, but I can't imagine it ever gets old when it happens, Andy.
I've been doing this 20 years. I got pages last week on a project that an artist and I are working on, and it just, you know, he did this, there was this one page, so there's this sequence where this boy and a girl who are romantically interested in each other, but it's still very much in that awkward phase, there's this uncomfortable moment for the boy, and Andrea, the artist, drew the boy like this close up, and he's like grabbed the collar of his shirt and he's like pulling it tight, like forward, and just like the very uncomfortable sort of way of like, ooh, how do I get out of this? And that was not, I didn't call for that at all in the script. He just, like, you know, he read the scene, he knew what was going on, and he figured out how to visualize it. I saw that panel and I was like, oh, how did I not think of that? That's great. And then I looked at my panel description, it was like, yeah, it was a lame panel description, and I was like, thanks, you saved my bacon on that one, buddy, thanks for making me look good. It's always exciting, even if it's not, you know, even if I have an issue with something or the storytelling's not perfect in some way, like it's always just fun to see the art come in. We might have to address something, but it's always fun to see it come in. I don't think that gets old.
Well, Keith, are you able to talk about what you're going to do next with Super Scooter Sydney?
Yeah, so I'm going to, we're going to print it out. I'm going to, the first thing I'll do is give a copy to my kids.
Nice.
And then, you know, I'm going to continue making comics. So I'm going to put it up on the web so people can enjoy it. And I'm going to, you know, as Andy said, I'm just going to write the next 5-page story and keep going from there. I think Super Scooter Sydney is a good character, and so I think she'll probably make an appearance in some more projects of mine.
That's but, good.
In Slice of Life comics, it's one of those things where, you know, we were talking about reading comics at supermarkets and convenience stores, so we might be closer than age than some of our listeners who might be younger than us. You know, there's so many platforms now where if you collected a couple of different short stories, you could take it to a crowdfunding site. You could kickstart a collection. You know, there's so many great avenues of how you could get your work out to the eyeballs of folks that want it. Not to mention digitally, digitally alone. It's one of those things where I feel like if you put this on social media, just that cover, like it's such a great cover. It's just got so much legs. And then you get into the story and go, this is a great story. It's also just stuff that's really fun to share. It's nice when the social media platforms can do their thing in a positive sense and get it out there. So it's great to hear that you're going to continue on, you know, writing stuff. And that's also kind of the beauty of comics, is being able to pitch different things or work through different ideas that maybe the next thing has nothing to do with this. And it's a whole other genre and it's a whole other thought.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the one thing you mentioned, the technology nowadays, and I think, and I mentioned this to Andy about being afraid to make your art because of gatekeepers or impediments. And I think one of the things that being involved in the workshop, being involved in the course, I learned is there's not as much an impediment as you think. If you know what the steps are and you're willing to work at it, you can make something and put it out in the world for people to see, without having to go through the traditional gatekeepers.
Absolutely. And different ways to find that audience that might be interested. And I feel like that's also what's cool when you go through something like a Kickstarter and look at just like what's in comics right now. It's stuff that myself at conventions, you can walk around and find stuff that you wouldn't have necessarily sought out because you didn't know to think about it. And then you see a book that just looks good and you go, great, it's called Headlopper? What? And it's such an easy concept. And you're like, this fantasy is not usually my bag, but I'm completely in. Or something like Super Scooter Sydney, where you see it and you look at the art and you're like, I'm completely in. You might not have necessarily walked in the door thinking like, I want this kind of book today, but it's so cool that there's that virtual, I guess, lack of a better descriptor, that virtual spinner rack still at times. You're like, that looks great. I want to try it. And you can take it and get it. It's really nice that
there are options. I mean, just to jump in a little bit on the gatekeeper thing, because that's a really good point. You know, and I felt like you were saying, Keith, when I was starting to get into comics, like I didn't, my version of what that means, what getting into comics or breaking into comics means, has changed drastically. But like when I was in my early 20s and I was getting my master's degree in St. Louis, I was like, this, you know, like to get into comics, I got to move to New York. Like I just thought that's where all comics were made. Right. And then I started paying attention and like, in the indicia, you know, that little writing, you know, on the inside of the comic, you know, I'd be like, this company's in California or this one's in, you know, in Texas or whatever. And, but it really took a while, even after I had gotten my, you know, my kind of first real job in comics was editing at Marvel. But it was even a couple of years after being there that I realized, like, this is not the only, you know, working at Marvel or writing or drawing for Marvel or DC is not the only way that this works. Like, now I knew that, right? I mean, I was completely aware when, like, the 7 founders of Image all left Marvel. Like, I was 100% on board with creator-owned comics as a fan. But once you start thinking about it in terms of what am I doing and my relationships or professionally with comics, it didn't seem viable to me. But it's actually gotten, you know, and gatekeepers is such a good word, but the gatekeepers have gotten more diversified. But there's also, there are places where there aren't gatekeepers, right? There's Kickstarter and there's digital comics and there's web comics and all kinds of stuff where you don't have to have somebody tell you, yes, I will publish this. You can now publish it yourself. You can print it yourself. And that's been a large part, I think, of even my journey through comics experience, is talking with people, figuring out where those barriers are. And that's where the creative services came from, is people would finish the class and be like, but I don't know how to do this. I'm like, well, for a long time, I felt like, well, you need to learn, right? But like, that's not my place to tell you that. That's just me being a jerk or lazy or both. I don't know. But then I realized, like, okay, well, we can offer this service. Like, we do have that expertise. We can offer this service. And, you know, and that's why I started my printing company, ONS Printing, is, okay, well, you know, now you've got a comic. Whether you use our creative services or not, you got a comic. Now I've got a printing company where we're trying to bring, you know, sort of bulk pricing down to regular human beings and small publishers. And, you know, we're even looking at distribution options that should be available within just a couple of months from now, if not sooner. So, and those are all those things. You know, a long time it was, how do I get in the Diamond catalog? Well, there are ways around that. You know, there are ways to do this now but if you're somebody who loves comics, loves and is willing to do some work, you can get your comic out. You can get it made and you can get it out into the world now. I think it's actually easier than it. That doesn't mean it's easy, but it's easier, I think, than it used to be. And our audiences have grown a lot. Like, you know, I mean, it used to be, you know, whenever I walked into my comic, you know, a dedicated comic shop, it used to be, you know, 10 to 20 other people that looked pretty much exactly like me. And that's not the way it is anymore. And that's a good thing.
One thing I wanted to also mention before we wrap up, Keith, is Sean Reinhart is your letterer, and the lettering on this is terrific, and the sound effects. Sean is also comics experience related. Did you all know each other going into this, or was that a connection that got made?
I did not know Sean, and that was a connection that got made. But, you know, again, when I got the lettering back, I was surprised. I thought, oh, he really nailed it and really captured some of the key moments in the comic. You know, Sydney is trying to rescue this unicorn named Sparkles, and there are points in the comic where he does add some effects to the Sparkles name where it, you know, it's, that's exactly, you know, what you would imagine a five-year-old girl, if you could visualize her words, that's exactly how she would say Sparkles.
Yeah, and just to plug Sean a little bit, he does lettering freelance. So if anybody's looking for a letterer, Sean Reinhart, S-E-A-N, Sean Reinhart, R. Now I'm going to not spell his last name correctly.
R-I-N-E-H-A-R-T.
Right. Yeah. Check. Yeah. If you search Sean Reinhart lettering, hopefully it'll direct you pretty quickly to him. And he's really talented. He's really good. And,
it's really
and
great.
If you need some lettering work, he'd be good.
Yeah, that last Sparkles on page 4 is great. It's all really great. It's all really good. And the coloring, just all of it, everything pops out so nicely. So right now you're not ready for digital distribution, not necessarily sharing this on social media. Is there a place folks can go to look for you online?
Yeah, absolutely. So my Twitter page for the project is Wakero Media, and it's WAKERO_media on Twitter. And I can also be found at my other Twitter handle, which is W Keith Robinson. So that's me.
Excellent.
Awesome.
And Andy, anything coming up, Comics Experience, the next little bit we should be aware of?
Nope. No, I'm just kidding. We do have another round of courses coming up, both art and writing courses that are available, that are open for enrollment. That's the terminology I'm looking for. And we've always got the Creators Workshop, which I feel like we don't plug enough because it's sort of a constant.
Right.
But it's a really, really wonderful resource. And we've been bulking it up. We've got Bon Alamagno now, who's a former EIC at Harris Comics. He worked at Marvel as a talent manager there. And he's our director there, and he's really bringing a lot of really cool stuff to it. And we have a YouTube channel with CE Hits List, which we just put up our second episode of, which we pair comics creators with musicians, and they talk about music and comics. So we had on the comic side, the Kieran and Jamie, the creators behind Wicked and Divine, And we had Terry Moore from Rachel Rising, Strangers in Paradise, and they like discuss comics and music with musicians, and you know it's a really cool new series. And I give Anne Randulik, who's our marketing guru at Comics Experience, 100% of the credit, because those are two things that she loves, and merging those has been like super cool, and it's clearly the hippest thing that we do as a company.
So that's YouTube, Comics Experience. I'm trying to look it up. I should have checked that out ahead of time. If I go to YouTube and search Comics Experience.
Yeah, hopefully it'll come up. That's what we're hoping. But yeah, we just launched it like 2 weeks ago. So you can get in on the ground floor on it. But yeah, we do have tons of cool stuff up, and we're talking with our publishing partners as folks come in and they get publishing deals. We're talking with our publishing partners now that the industry is starting to come back to life about rescheduling everything and getting all our books back and getting them back distributed to stores.
Excellent.
Which is always good.
Well, I want to do a quick plug of one of my collaborators, Meredith Moriarty, that's done a few things with me. I've been lucky enough to work with her a few times. Just got nominated for an Eisner for her webcomic, Third Shift Society, which you can find over at Webtoon. So go over to Webtoon and look up Third Shift Society for the Eisner-nominated Meredith Moriarty on writing, art, and lettering over there. It's a great comic, and it's awesome that she is maybe getting some more eyeballs.
I agree with both of those things. That is a great comic. I have read it, and she is also very worthy of an Eisner nom. She's fantastic.
Yeah, she's great, and you can go back through my Twitter media feed and see examples of Meredith's work, and she's on Twitter at Meredith_draws. So go check out Meredith. Keith, thanks so much for doing this, taking the time and a chance to talk about what you're doing and how you got there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. This was great. It's a lot of fun.
I really appreciate it. Well, until next time. Oh, I gotta do the get in touch with Comics Experience. You got info@comicsexperience on the email side. You can find Comics Experience on Twitter @comic_experience, and then also on YouTube for the new show that Andy mentioned. Until next time, keep making the comics.